Harvest Messages are brought to you by Harvest Partners. To receive free email daily devotions or to become a Harvest Partner, please visit us online at harvest.org.
So tonight we're taking a deeper look. I know we're in chapter 3 and 4, but I'm just going to take a deeper look into chapter 4. This chapter is jam-packed with so much. You know, everything from great leadership to crying out to God in those raw and honest prayers. You know, we see courage in the midst of just difficult opposition. We also see incredible faith that's combined with very practical planning, structure, the ways to accomplish the mission, protecting themselves and their loved ones, right? I was praying about what direction God wanted me to take this talk tonight, and I could have focused on, you know, any of those things that I just listed, right? Preach! Could have talked about any of that. But they're all great topics to dig deeper on. But one takeaway that God showed me that I want to share with you guys tonight is to remember our calling. Remember our calling. I titled this talk, if you're taking notes, Backyard Maintenance. Backyard Maintenance. And I couldn't decide. The original title I had was Go to Your Calling. I don't know if he had that on there or not. But I couldn't decide on the two, so I was going to have them both. But he didn't have it on there, so that's cool. So turn to your neighbor, say, Backyard Maintenance. There's moments looking back that I can see clear callings on my life. When my wife Stephanie was walking down the aisle and her face was just a mess because she was bawling her eyes out before she even got to the altar, I looked at her and I went, I'm called to love her, you know, unconditionally. When each of my kids were born, looking into their big, beautiful eyes for the first time, I thought, man, I didn't know this love this strong existed. You know, when Jesus called me to himself, when he touched my heart, when he spoke to me, when he freed me, when he loved me, when he placed that small fire deep within me that has over the years grown into this raging blaze, you know, Jesus called me. I just wanted more and more of God. When God first called me to serve here at Harvest, I was blown away. I was like, me? Like, you got the right guy? You want me to serve here at Harvest? I talked to one of the pastors. They had me go over to and talk to Alex, the head usher. Alex, you here? Alex is the man. Alex was like, hey, so you want to serve? You want to usher? I'm like, yeah, I really do. And he looks at me and he goes, you bought an extra large size shirt? And I said, yeah. And he took me to the back and he threw me an extra large shirt. And I was like, what? You got to be kidding me. I went outside in the parking lot and I was like, babe, I'm going to be serving at Harvest. Can you believe this? And she was like, we got to take a picture. We got to get, you know. So I put the shirt on there in the parking lot, took a picture. I think I slept in the shirt that night, but whatever. So I've served in a few areas here at Harvest, you know, counseling ministry, many trips to Fred Jordan Mission, security, crusades. And then God called me to something that still kind of freaks me out a bit and blows my mind. To help come alongside Pastor Greg here and the pastors to help teach, love on, and care for all of you. You know, the congregation here at OC, to be a shepherd, a pastor. You know, Pastor Tim, like, what? That still is crazy to me. Or as my kids like to say, Pastor Daddy. But that's my calling. You know, those are my callings. Christian, husband, father, pastor. Boris, do you have those? All right. So there you go. Christian, husband. So you got to give Boris a hand. He told me not to do this. Boris comes in here and does this every single week. Yeah. And he's like, Tim, you're taking away my treasure, but, you know, I gave him like 300 slides, so hopefully he'll be able to keep up a little bit. Okay, so as a Christian, I'm called to love God and love people, Matthew 22, to share the gospel, Matthew 16, to make disciples and baptize them in the name of the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit, Matthew 28. As a husband, I'm called to love my wife the way that Christ loved the church. No big deal there, right? Ephesians 5:25. You know, I struggle with this one so much. I got it tattooed right on my finger. And I didn't get the abbreviate. I didn't get EPH. I got the whole Ephesians 5:25 on my finger so I can remember that one. As a father, to train up my kids in the way of the Lord so that when they're older, they won't depart from it. Proverbs 22:6, right? As a pastor, I'm called to feed God's lambs, to tend his sheep, to feed his sheep. John 21. I'm called to equip all of you for the work of the ministry. That equipping is so that we may have unity, knowledge, maturity to attain all that Jesus has for us. And all that for the goal. What's the goal? The goal is to be a part of the church, which is referred to as a body, right? We all have a part here. We all need each other. If we're to fulfill the Great Commission, sharing the gospel and making disciples, we all have a place where we are called here in the church. So my job is to come alongside the pastors here and to help prepare you for that. And as you can see, there's some opportunities that we're called to for a season. There's some opportunities we get called to until we're called home. Either way, as followers of Jesus Christ, we're called. Philippians 3:20 tells us that we are not at home here, but we have a citizenship in heaven. So until we punch that passport on our trip to heaven, we need to remember what we've been called to and to be faithful in that. Look, we don't have to be perfect, right? That's not going to happen. We need to be faithful. Nehemiah, he had been called to serve God and God's people. He had been called for a specific job. Build a wall. This wall for a season is Nehemiah's calling. God had placed this burden on his heart, and the burden became so heavy he could no longer carry it, no longer bear it. So building is underway. They're knee-deep in their calling and working to accomplish their mission. And of course, opposition comes. Or as Pastor Greg said a couple weeks ago, when we start to build, or when you start to build, you start to battle. And it's so true. When we step out in hope, the enemy is going to step out to halt, but Jesus steps out to help. That sounded cooler when I wrote it. I got three H's in there, but now I'm feeling a little bit weird about it. But sounds cool when you're in a room by yourself listening to music. And I got a double T one here too. There's no triumphs without troubles. Hey. Abraham Lincoln once said, "In the end, it's not the years in your life that count, it's the life in your years." It's always going to be difficult to step out into your calling, but we're not stepping out alone. So chapter 4, verses 1 through 3, we see these two characters, right? Dumb and Dumber. And I read this and I think to myself, man, get a life. Like, what is these guys' problem? You know, just leave these guys alone. So we have, there you go. So we have Sanballat, whatever his name is, in verse 1. And he sounds so dramatic, doesn't he? He's like, in verse 2, he's like, what are these feeble Jews doing? Like, is this, okay, Mr. Star Wars? Oh, yeah, hang on, not yet on that one. That one's coming up in a moment. So Sanballat, or whatever his name is, he goes along. What are these feeble Jews doing? Will they restore it for themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they finish this up in a day? Will they revive these stones from heaps of rubbish and burn ones at that? And then there's Tobiah. He's like the sidekick, right? He's like, yeah, if a fox jumps up on that wall, it's going to fall over, you know? And they're like the textbook duo, the villain with the sidekick that always has something off the wall to say, like that Jafar and parrot picture, or you know, you have the Dumb and Dumber one. Do you have the Beavis and Butthead one? Yeah. So one more. There you go. That's how I picture these guys. These guys at the, you know, outside the walls, just, you know. So anyways, so you can take those off. So that's the pattern we see throughout this. Yeah, that's a good one. So that's the pattern that we see throughout this chapter. The evil duo, right? They're coming against the hero of the story, Nehemiah. Nehemiah is just a guy that really that God's using, but he's the hero in the story. So they went through this pattern: opposition, prayer, work. Opposition, prayer, work. And you see that verse 1 through 3, opposition. Verses 4 through 5, prayer. Verse 6, work. 7 through 8, more opposition. Verse 9, prayer. Back to 10, work. God's showing us something here. Let's not blow through this chapter and miss it. I have 3 points of application. 3 points. Why 3? Because 4 is just too many. So 3 ways that we can not only go back on our calling, but we can anticipate, listen, you guys, that we can anticipate breakdown, that we can anticipate crumbling. We can anticipate weeds and tree roots growing up into our walls or our callings, destroying them. 3 things that we can take with us tonight to start bringing about change in our life, to start that much needed maintenance. Who here does not need any kind of change in their life at all? You don't need any change at all. Any perfect people now? No. All right. I'm in the right crowd. Imperfect people in the hands of a perfect God, right? There you go. So point number one, I'm calling curb appeal. Curb appeal over calling. Curb appeal over calling. So I'm going to try to do my little illustration here. When people found out that I was speaking tonight, they're like, Tim, what's your illustration going to be? You're the illustration. I guess I'm the illustration guy now. All right. So in the Bible, we're referred to as a tent, right? That this is temporary. This body's temporary and it's a tent. Well, I'm going to make it a house for this illustration. It's modern times here. And so if this represents us, there you go. And this is, you know, we got walls coming off the side of our house. And, you know, this is maybe we put on our happy face. And what do we have in our front yard? Our front yard is where we want everybody to see, right? And get ready with that the first illustration, please, Boris, but not yet. And so in the front yard, we have a tree that maybe that represents our body. You know, we want people to see that. It looks good. We want to take care of it. We want to work on it. And maybe we've got some shrubs over here that, you know, maybe that represents money. You know, we want to do well. We want to be wealthy. You know, we want to be somebody. You know, we got another shrub over here that's maybe a, you know, represents a nice car. You know, we want that nice car in the front of our house. And maybe this walkway here, maybe this walkway is, for some of us even here, we want religion to look good for everybody that's watching, everybody that's driving by. Look how religious they are. Look at that happy face, and they got it all together, you know. And then in our backyard, you know, we'll say that this here is our backyard. We'll call this is our calling, our callings. And so we got walls in our backyard. You know, this might be the wall. Maybe if you're married, this is your marriage. Marriage. Give me a break, come on. So maybe this here is the wall we're all Christians. This is the Christian wall, your relationship with God. You know, we'll say God. Or maybe you're a parent. You know, we got these walls up, these walls of our calling. You know, we're a disciple, right? Right? Come on, you guys are quiet, right? All right. So can you guys see that in the back? So can you put up that first illustration? So maybe it looks something like that there. Yeah. We all have the same 24 hours in a day, right? Some of us sleep a little more than others. My 13-year-old daughter thinks that it's cool to sleep like 18 of those 24 hours. But she flips out when I'm like, what are you doing? But we want that curb appeal, right? We want that curb appeal. We want everybody to see this here that we got going on. We want it to look good. We want it to look like everything's dialed in. You know, the job, the body, the religion, the money. But the question is at what cost? At what cost? Because we all have the same 24 hours a day, and we can't focus on all this and all this at the same time. And you know, if we're focusing more in one area down here, something's getting neglected over here. So the question is, at what cost? Benjamin Franklin once said, of all of our infirmities, vanity is dearest to us. We starve all other vices to keep that alive. The definition of vanity is inflated pride in oneself or one's appearance, something that is vain, empty, valueless. I was recently talking to a friend about a study that was done right here at UCI about alcoholism in Orange County. Alcoholism in Orange County, and they did this extensive study. And I was blown away at what they found was the number one reason for alcoholism in Orange County. You guys will never believe what it is. It's not a disease. It's not from family, you know, history. The number one reason for alcoholism in Orange County is keeping up with the Joneses. Keeping up with the Joneses, the number one reason. The definition of keeping up with the Joneses is to always want to own the same expensive objects and do the same things as your friends or neighbors because you're worried about seeming less important socially than they are. Proverbs 18:11 says, a rich man's wealth is his strong city and like a high wall in his own imagination. Now, I'm not bashing wealth. Or I'm not bashing having a nice car or any of those things or staying in shape. You know, those things are good, and I, you know, it's important to me as well. But we can learn so much from Nehemiah here on this. They're building this thing, And these guys start in with their comments. And so Nehemiah and the people, they pray. And I like what verse 6 says. Let's read through verses 4 through 6, and then we'll catch in on verse 6. And starting in verse 4, it says, you guys there? You guys got your Bibles out? I think we have it up on the screen. He says, "O God, for we're despised, turn back their taunt on their own heads. Give them up to be plundered in the land where they're captives. Do not cover their guilt. Let not their sins be blotted out from your sight, for they provoked you to anger in the presence of the builders." And so this is his prayer. He's getting into, God, just rain down fire on them. They deserve it. And then what does it say? Verse 6, as soon as he ends the prayer, "So we built the wall." There's no, "Hey, we've got to figure this out and plan, just get back to work," right? They were in danger of these tribes, these rulers, these kingdoms. They all had real threats of being attacked from the outside the walls, and they could have buckled to the pressure. It might have been tempting to build the wall, say, a little thinner. Let's build this thing fast and high so that it looks good. But if it would have been thinner, it would have been worthless, right? First storm that comes through blows it over. The same thing, listen to this, you guys, holds true for building our calling. If we take those shortcuts in our marriage because we have to work late or because we're busy, we got something going on, we want to hang out with the guys or the ladies want to go out on their thing, then we're neglecting our calling. We sacrifice those date nights. We stop buying flowers for our wife. We stop kissing our spouse before we leave for the day or when we go to bed at night. Or how about this? When we're too busy for our kids, "Man, I got to work. I got a deadline. I'm busy. Man, there's a really important basketball game on." That one's been getting me lately because the Lakers are back and they're doing good. They're at 500. Just saying. Prayer works. Prayer works. Yes. I'm talking about marriages and raising up our kids, and you guys are clapping for basketball, but all right. It's all good. So how about this? How about this, you guys? So seriously now, seriously. So how about this? I'm so involved with church that I'm neglecting my callings. How about that? That one hit home for me. Raising my children, spending time with my wife. I recently read a book. It's called The Like Switch. The Like Switch. My friend Colt. Colt right here. Colt, stand up. Come on, stand up. My friend Colt recommended this book to me, so I guess he's trying to tell me I need to be more likable. But I love you, dude. So this book was written by an FBI agent, and it's a great book. Seriously, I highly recommend it. And it's a pretty this FBI agent had a pretty simple job. His job was to go out and find spies in the United States and get them to flip on their own country and start spying for the United States against their own country. No big deal. That's easy, right? And he was successful in doing this. Listen, not once, not twice, over and over and over again, he would get spies to flip on their country. And he said that the secret to his success was getting spies to like him. What? But that's so simple, but it's really what he did. He just got them to like him. And he talks about this formula that's called the friendship formula. The friendship formula, which is proximity plus frequency plus duration, plus intensity. Friendship formula. Proximity plus frequency plus duration plus intensity. Take a screenshot of that with your phone. What he found was just by being in the general proximity of someone while giving them friend signals, smile, eyebrows, the head tilt, whatever, that people would start to like him. They would become friendly. Now, when you ramp up the frequency on how often you're together, or the duration, the amount of time that you spend together during those times that you're together, you become closer friends. Then when you up the intensity, where you're having a deeper conversation or maybe a touch on the shoulder, that you become more and more comfortable and you begin to have an impact on each other in your relationship. Think about your most important relationships. Think about your marriage, your children, your church family. If you're single, your closest friends, your parents, your siblings. If we aren't spending time with them, if we're not spending time with our spouse, with our children, someone else is. And the more time spent in longer durations, in the intensity will become greater. When the intensity grows, so does the impact in that relationship. Gangs, To most people, gangs make no sense at all. Gangs lead to violence, drugs, young men and women, they're sentenced to long prison sentences every single day because of gang activity. They end up dead due to gang violence. And the question is like, why? Why would you want to do that? Why would you want to be in a gang? Because they found someone that would spend time with them. They found someone that would be in their proximity with frequency, duration, and intensity. They were longing for a family. The same goes with affairs and failed marriages. Growing apart, not spending time together, often for long periods of time with intensity. If we're too busy trying to build our kingdom, all this stuff here, we will live to see our calling crumble underneath the weight of it. It's not too late to make those small changes that will add up to large deposits in the calling or in those walls, as the illustration shows. So point number two is pirates and Vikings. Pirates and Vikings. And I have no illustration for the pirates part of it, but I was trying to think of like things from the past, like things that plunder, they do plundering. And I found a cool story about Vikings, but it just sounded weird calling point number two Vikings. So I did pirates and Vikings. You guys are so quiet, man. Has it been a long day or what? You're making me nervous. There you go. Oh, geez. All right. Psalms 89, verse 40 and 41. It says this, "You've broken down all his walls. You've brought his strongholds to ruin. All who pass by plunder him." When the walls of our marriage, our children, our calling get broken down, everything that passes by has the opportunity to plunder it. Vikings in the 8th century, they took on what I was reading was an unheard of attack on Paris, France. And Paris was very modern. They had a modern military for their time. They had great big walls and a castle where Vikings were relatively, you know, barbaric and simple tactics and all those kinds of things. But the Vikings wanted to plunder Paris. And so they attacked this city for months and months and months looking for weaknesses. And they attacked this one area in this corner for so long that when a flood had come, this area where a bridge was attached, it eroded it away so much that it came collapsing down this corner of the wall, and they were able to get a foothold in the city. And they almost sacked the city, these very simple, barbaric guys with this very modern town, or this very modern city. So back to our verse 7. So now we have Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs, the Amorites, and the men of Ashdod. They're plotting together against Jerusalem to stir up trouble is what the text says, right? And then what does Nehemiah do? Nehemiah prays. And then verse 10 through 12, there's more problems. And I promise the Viking story will tie in here in a minute. But where do these problems come from this time? They came from within, right? Read verses 10 through 13. It says, "The people of Judah began to complain. The workers are getting tired. There's much rubble to be removed. We're never going to be able to build this wall by ourselves. The enemies are saying they're going to kill us, right? The Jews who live near, they're coming back. And they're like, we're surrounded. They're coming from all directions. They're going to kill us. They're going to attack us." So Nehemiah starts scrambling. He's going to place guards behind the lowest parts of the wall and exposed area. He stationed people to stand guard by their families, armed with swords and spears and bows. I recently heard someone say that big problems were small problems that were left unaddressed in the past. When we fail to address issues, they grow into monsters that seem too big to handle. And what started outside the walls is now affecting people on the inside. You can feel the tension in the story starting to rise, right? The rubble's too high. They're going to kill us. There's five armies. They're surrounding us. Wherever we turn, they're going to attack us. So Nehemiah starts scrambling. "Put the people over here. Put this over there. Take a spear. Grab a sword." And it says in verse 14, listen to this. Nehemiah looked over the situation, and what did he do? He remembered the Lord who is great and glorious. I think this brings up an important point here. Now, in this case, the walls of their calling, they had already been destroyed. They were rebuilding. And maybe for some of us here, the calling of our marriage, our children, our relationship with God, maybe it's going great. And that's fantastic. Or maybe we're in a season where we're starting to notice things cracking. We're starting to notice chipping away. And maybe, if we're honest, there's been some neglect. There's been some neglect. You're sure that the enemy is right outside the walls of your calling, and they're ready to start wreaking havoc. Do you have that illustration number two? Or maybe the walls are already destroyed, and maybe the Vikings are already in your backyard, like that, and they're plundering your calling. They're taking advantage of it. Whatever the situation we're in today, it's time, like Nehemiah, to stop, verse 14, to look around and remember that God is with you, who is great and glorious. Amen. One guy's excited. Yeah. Love Lance. Listen, we're not fighting this battle alone. The Lord is my shepherd, right? I shall not want. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. God tells us in Isaiah 43, do not fear. I've redeemed you. I've summoned you by name. You are mine. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. When you pass through the rivers, they will not sweep over you. When you walk through the fire, you will not be burned. The flames will not set you ablaze, for I am the Lord your God. Amen? Look, I know this is speaking to someone right now. I don't know exactly who this is for. But like Nehemiah, whatever season we currently find ourselves in, we need to stop, remember that God is with us, and remember that he's for us. You know, that is so important. And we need to go back to our calling. We can't buy back tomorrow, but we can start building again today. The me, the you of 5, 10 years from now, is going to be here faster than you think. And you're going to be so grateful for the investment that you put into your calling today. The small little steps, the small little things that you start doing here today. I don't want Vikings plundering my calling. I don't know about you, but I know that you don't either. But we need to start making those small investments every single day, doing those little things, that little maintenance every day. Guys, listen, you're the only man that could be a husband to your wife, that can love her the way that Jesus loved the church. Go to your calling. Make that investment. Ladies, you're the only woman that can be a wife to your husband, that can show him that loving respect that God calls you to. You got to go to that calling. Parents, you don't have to raise your kids in the way of the Lord, but culture will raise them in the flavor of the season, in what's popular. James Dobson said this, no job can compete with the responsibility of shaping and molding a new human being. That's so good. As Christians, we've been set apart, called into something greater. We've been adopted into the family of God when we accepted Jesus. We all know that. The walls in Jerusalem, they were a symbol of national pride and protection. What shame it brought to the Jews when they were destroyed, laying in ruins. What shame we bring upon God's names as Christians when the walls that we have been called to lay in ruins while everything else that we're working on looks great. There's nothing we can do about the past. This isn't a beat you up session. But as long as there's breath in our lungs, there's a whole lot that we can do about tomorrow. Max Lucado said in his new book, there is a reason that the windshield of your car is bigger than the rearview mirror. Your future matters more than your past. Point number three, we have the cheat code. We have the cheat code. I was talking to my man Sipes in the back there. Anybody here remember that game from like, I think it was the 80s or 90s called Contra? Contra? Any Contra people in the house? This game, it was the best. I loved it. But it was impossible to beat this game. And I remember, I still to this day remember the cheat code. Up, down, left, right, B, A, select, start. Boom. It was a big deal. You know, we would, my friends and I, we would go to the liquor store down the street from my house, and they would sell these magazines, and there was a little section in there that not many people knew about that had the cheat codes to the games. And we would go down there, we would pool our money together to buy this magazine and get the cheat codes. And after all that Nehemiah and the Jews had been through in the first 19 verses of the chapter, they needed verse 20. They needed the cheat code. Verse 20 says this: God will fight for us. God gives us life. He gives us the ultimate weapons, his word, his spirit, the ultimate, you know, the unlimited ammo of it. I know for some of you, if not most of you, there's some parts of this talk that hit home. It did for me. But remember this, Matthew 11, verse 20, starting in verse 28, Jesus said, "Come to me, all you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you, because I am humble and gentle at heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy to bear, and the burden I give you is light." You don't have to fight this battle alone. We can give this battle over to God, and God will fight for us. Yeah, we have to do our part. Yes, we need to be faithful to our calling, but God will fight the battle. There's things that we need to do. Practical things to make sure our walls, our calling, are maintained. But let the battle be God's. We need to keep our focus fixed on Jesus, the author, the finisher of our faith, so we can run this race light and feeling good. That was some religious fat weighing us down, or we're trying to hurdle and sidestep sin so it doesn't trip us up. When we reach those times in our life when things are not going well, maybe we feel discouraged, or we're just flat out fatigued. We need to just go to our calling. We don't need to worry about keeping up with the Joneses. We don't need to worry about the enemy outside of our walls. God's got this. You need to be the one who God called you to be. It might be time for some backyard maintenance. It might be time to go back to your calling. Go be the spouse, the mom, the dad, the Christian, the follower of Jesus, the pastor, the leader, the disciple that God has called you to be. God has given you everything you need. Now go to your calling. Come on.